Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome to the Coco Express Show for Saturday, July 14, 2012. I am hoping that all of you have made it through the wonderful heat fiasco we've been having this past week and a half. I know that I have been really knocking myself out with drinking water. I'm waterlogged, I got a drinking problem, you name it, when it comes to water. However, I'm so glad that we're able to join you today. We have our monthly Real Estate Straight Talk show today, and I would like to be able to let you know that Joe's not going to be joining us this month. However, we are going to miss him, but we know that he's with us in spirit, so we're going to move forward to Real Estate Straight Talk.
Welcome to Real Estate Straight Talk with industry professional Sharon Homer, breaking it down and giving you the inside track on the real estate front so that you too can achieve the new American dream.
Hello, everyone. Today we have Real Estate Straight Talk with Sharon Homer. Sharon, you back with us?
I'm here.
Oh, great. We're so glad to have you back. We missed you last month. But this month, it seems we have a very special show today, don't we?
Yes. I believe we do. We have two other really impactful women that will give us some additional insight in some other areas.
Yes, we have two dynamic women from two really really busy states, okay, really busy cities. We have Connie Browning from Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Connie.
Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Glad to be here. Oh, we're so glad to have you. And Connie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. You said I am from Cleveland, Ohio. Yes, one of the larger urban communities here, and there is a lot of things going on in Cleveland in terms of the transformation of the urban core here, and I'll deal with that a little later on in the show. I have been in real estate as a licensed agent for about 12 years. I've been in the business, however, over 20 years, as I've been dabbling in the property management for a very long time. I really work well with first-time home buyers. I usually deal with in that area for the most part with first-time home buyers, and it's really, really, really exciting to see people still engaged and people are still wanting to get and grab a hold of the American dream, and that is of home ownership.
Oh, great. Excellent. Excellent. And we also have joining us today, Joy Ferguson. Hello, Joy.
Hello, Aurelia.
Hi, Joy from Chi-Town, Chicago, Illinois. Tell us a little bit about you, Joy.
I've been in the real estate industry since 1993. I have a pretty broad spectrum. I was an underwriter, senior processor, senior finance manager doing commercial and residential loans, and I had a specific target market, which was investors who own more than 10 properties.
Okay, great, great. Now, Sharon.
Yes.
Hi. We have been discussing the current state of the real estate industry right now and how it stands. And we've been talking about it from a particular perspective, which is Delaware. Now that we have a broader perspective we can discuss, what do you think that we should ask these ladies about, you know, what they see?
you know, just pretty much, I guess, the overall market. What type of, I mean, Delaware, I believe the markets are the same across the board. And we've been really talking about different ways to invest and what you hear, the doom and gloom of real estate on the news and their perspective. So I guess a good question would be a little bit of insight of what you're seeing. Is it a high foreclosure rate, a lot of vacancies? Like, what are you seeing and what are you hearing in your market, in your area?
Who would like to begin?
Well, I'll jump right in. I have no problem. The Chicagoland area, we're still not as we're still not running the numbers that, say, a Nevada or California or Florida would be running, but they're filing new foreclosure filings at the rate of 60 to 70 a day, which is actually down from a high of, they were doing like 100 a day. It's mostly impacting middle-class Americans, and mm-hmm. it also is due to lender devaluation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you want to explain the lender devaluation for those who may not know that terminology?
Oh, okay. What happens, what has been happening, especially since, you know, the Frank Dodd Act and other constraints mm-hmm. on mortgage brokers and the mortgage industry, and specifically after they received the TARP funds, the lenders are foreclosing on a home. Then they put that home back on the market for sometimes 5 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So when it sells, it becomes a MLS sale. It effectively mm-hmm. devalues every property mm-hmm. around the neighborhood. Similar properties get devalued as much as 60%, mm-hmm. and otherwise in the neighborhood it adds to the foreclosure rate. Then the lenders raise their minimum loan amount. So, in effect, mm-hmm. they don't make any loans. They come back mm-hmm. to the Obama administration and say, but we can't make any loans because there aren't any houses that are mm-hmm. at the minimum loan amount, when they actually contributed to creating mm-hmm. houses that don't meet the minimum loan amount.
Right. And I would like to add, I know one thing that I see in addition to that, and I'm starting to see even more of now than I have ever seen, the bank-owned properties in our area are pretty much positioning themselves as, well, they are pretty much the investors, but, you know, you see a lot of the banks have homes. You typically see them sell it, and it's in the as-is condition. Now I'm starting to see, I don't know if you guys are seeing it, but the banks are putting work into these homes, and they're still devaluing the area because they are dropping prices significantly. But mm-hmm. the work, the minimum amount of work that they're putting into these homes, they're getting, they're reselling it. And these homes look just as good as the homes that are on the market, but mm-hmm. yet they're significantly cheaper than the other homes on the market because, of course, they are bank-owned and they have been accrued at the share sales and, you know, because through to foreclosure or whatever else. But I'm not sure if you guys are seeing that, but I have noticed now. I have always seen, of course, the bank-owned properties, but they are, I've seen them, you see them first, and you see the condition that the home was in, but when the bank gets it, they're doing new carpet, new paint, and just different things, and they're still a whole lot, you know, it's bringing the market down significantly, just as, I believe that was Joy that was speaking, just as she stated. So are you guys seeing that as well, or?
Connie, you're quiet.
Where okay. Bank. I haven't really seen, at least in my area, where banks are putting money into homes that they are purchasing and then devaluing them. I don't see that. I haven't seen that happening. And the homes that they are purchasing, they are, of course, just getting these homes and just selling them at, oh my God, rock bottom prices, where it's really hurting the other homes that aren't, you know, that are still privately owned, and they're really suffering as to try to sell their homes. I mean, I have homes that I have listed for sale that are not, we have homes, they're not homes that need any work, but I'm having a very, very difficult time selling them because the bank purchasing similar homes and drastically reducing the prices on them.
Well, here in the Chicagoland area, we have a widespread. They'll sell a luxury home as is. They're the only ones that are still getting a significant value. For instance, last year, I did an as-is short sale, but it was $400,000, and it was in that area, and they fixed absolutely nothing. But for that area, it was a bargain for my particular buyers. They considered it a bargain. Now, they're not... What we're seeing is they're not really putting any money into it. However, they are giving the potential buyer time to, shall we say, get a secondary 203 Streamline K loan that they use, you don't use it for rehab. You use it mainly for upgrades and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the lenders are now allowing mold remediation and things like that on the 203 Streamline, where 3 or 4 years ago you had mold, and your seller had better do something before somebody sees it. But the one thing that they are doing is they are selling condos that may be occupied, and they're not removing the occupants first. So you can't see the inside because you can't. It says, you know, may be occupied, do not disturb occupants. But they're not, they foreclosed on it. They, you know, taking it to sheriff's sale, but they haven't removed the people inside. So a potential buyer has to consider now, did they destroy the property? What the property is going to look like? How much is it going to cost me to remove these people? But, I mean, for instance, a 2,000-square-foot condominium is
$28,000.
It's in an up-and-coming area, but you have to find out and pay for the removal of the occupants, which, you know, they normally take care of removing the people so they can show the property.
Did someone say how? Okay.
and a lot of lenders are using.
It's not particular to condos, but we have seen that here also, Joy.
Where they haven't removed the occupants, but they've sold it.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. See, it all actually listed on the MLS, and just the verbiage that you just stated, please do not disturb occupants, we see that also.
But that is really hazardous. In a pretty dangerous way, because a potential buyer has to look at, especially with the new laws that are in effect regarding removal of a tenant, foreclosure of
correct.
A tenant. It is not that buyer's tenant.
That's correct.
You know, it should be the bank's responsibility to remove them.
Yeah, because it's subject to leasing terms,
terms. They could be in there another 6 months before they get put out by the sheriff. And you've bought and paid for this, and you're paying the assessments. The banks are even trying to get away with not paying the assessments.
I know.
How much more money can they make? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, Connie, you're not seeing this in Cleveland?
What I'm seeing here is that the banks are still utilizing a program called Cash for Easy. They're still doing that yet. I haven't seen where they're selling homes with occupants still in them. Not to say that that's not happening, but I hear more often where they're still offering the homeowner or the tenant or whoever is occupying the property cash for them to move, clean out the property, and they'll give them cash in exchange for returning the keys to them. That's still very much a part of what's going on here.
Yeah, here as well. I actually have one of those as a current client with one of the bigger banks. So, yeah, that is definitely going on here. But I just thought it was very interesting that the banks are putting, I'm sure it's not a significant amount of money, but they make the homes look like the regular homes on
homes
the market.
Homes in the neighborhood.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they are, the prices are, as Joy and Connie both stated, rock bottom. And I just thought that is, and still think that is very interesting. I remember at a day where appraisers used to not appraise homes based off of bank loans and the foreclosed because everyone knows that they were as is, but it's not the case anymore.
Well, they have not been utilizing. It appears what goes on with the cash for keys is if the occupant does not respond to the cash for keys, they're just ignoring them. They're still selling it on the courthouse steps, which, you know, the bank usually ends up buying their own property back, putting it in the REO and passing it on to a realtor.
Yes.
But if the person doesn't respond to cash for keys, then they're like, okay, that's your problem now. If you want to buy this, that's your problem. And there can be some significant issues with that. Another duplex condominium in a rather nice area, similar to the $400,000 example before, when the bank gave the person cash for keys. However, when the realtor put their key in and turned the lock, the place had been stripped. Even the spiral staircase to the lower level was gone.
Oh, my God.
And so a $300,000 the owner owed like $270,000, sold for $23,000.
Wow.
Because the fireplaces were gone. The spiral staircase was gone. Sinks, paneling, molding, cabinets.
It was a shell. They sold you a shell.
Correct. They
Pretty
sold
much.
That person a shell. Fortunately, the person that bought it for $23,000 was a carpenter. So he just went on Craigslist and started acquiring things. But that's the danger. And they had given that person cash for keys. It's just by the time the realtor got over there to, you know, look it over, to take the pictures, to put it on the MLS, it was a shell. And so if you have an occupant of a 2,000-square-foot condo and the bank has it listed, do not disturb the occupants, and they're not going to remove them, not only should the buyer consider adding on the money and expense for removing the person, but now you've got to have a significant reserve just in case they remove something, like half of the fixtures.
Right.
Wow. So you guys really have a lot to endure and deal with in regards to just showing a property to a potential buyer, I see.
Yeah, the market, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, in my opinion, I feel like the market affects Americans as a whole, but it directly affects agents and everyone in the business, lenders, and in a very significant way, which is, you know, another question that I've had for both Connie and Joy is, I mean, you hear a lot lately. I mean, actually, you hear a lot of mixed reviews of the market is increasing, house values and, you know, sales are increasing. What are your experiences where you are as far as that? How do you feel the market is trending now? Like, how do you feel as though is it increasing for you? Like, do you see, what are you starting to see in your areas?
Well, I'm not
I get this question all the time.
Values in Cleveland. What I see is a stable market. It's almost as if it's almost stable, but it's still, the values are still declining in most areas. There are a few areas where we do see a trending upwards, but it's very slow. I mean, it's very little, but we do see it before. Overall, the market is still very low.
Well, we see the luxury properties, $400,000 and above, that market is still, it doesn't seem to be as impacted. You can still, a lot of the lenders and also note buyers and even hard money lenders have now moved to the point where they're only doing properties $400,000 and above. Now, the under $250,000 market, that's the market where it's completely decimated. You can't sell your condominium because seven other units in the building out of 40 are also for sale, and they've been on the MLS for 140 days. The market that's really doing brisk business is due to the fact that investors are coming in, picking up anything and everything, and they're actually securitizing and winterizing the property and just paying the property taxes and not even attempting to either rent it or resell it.
Okay. Okay. And I guess I would have to agree here with a lot with Connie. Is I see a lot of the stabilization, but I don't think that it's something that has anything to do with an upturn in the market. I see consistency. I don't think it has anything to do with what anybody in government is doing to help the market. I think it has a lot to do with agents getting out of the business because it's so hard and difficult. And I think it has to do with, because there's so many agents getting out of the business, there has to be business left for someone. And I think that's the business that we're starting to see. That's just my opinion. But I saw some of the numbers here at the, I work in the Newcastle County area of Delaware, and the numbers had taken a major downward turn, and people that were a part of the agents that were a part of the board in the business from before the market crashed until now. So it is like in the hundreds when it used to be in the thousands, like thousands of agents. Now it's like 800. It's a significant downturn. So for me, I mean, just in our immediate area, I think I do see consistency in a lot of clients, buyers, sellers, renters, landlords, investors, everybody coming in. But I don't think it really has anything to do with the market changing as a positive because of what's going on, like what people hear on the news. I honestly think it has to do with, you know, agents getting out of the business. That's in my area. So,
and I concur with that because also here in the Cleveland area, there are a lot of agents that are getting out of the business, and we've been seeing that for a while now. But that's also a very positive thing for me.
Me too.
Okay.
The business is being left for someone, and that someone is me.
That's right.
So I find myself capitalizing on a lot of potential buyers, especially investors. There are a lot of investors that are now getting in this area, and I'm getting a lot of referrals in that regard because a lot of them are looking futuristically in terms of purchasing homes and putting lease option tenants in them, knowing that in the next couple of years, these individuals are going to be in a position to purchase. And so they're going to have, you know, 10, 12, 20 properties where they have, you know, lease option tenants in them. And in a couple of years, they're going to really be, you know, making a lot of money in a position to get to make a lot of money. And that's
We don't do the lease options as much here because traditionally lease options were no better than renters. I mean, here, if you're going to do it in Chicago, it has always been a land contract. It's never been a lease option. The lease option, because from the money side, the lenders, because I'm fully on the money side as an underwriter, a former underwriter, processor, loan finance. I'm still doing finance as it is, but from that position, in certain states, it's lease option. Right next door in Indiana, they lease option. In Chicago, in this metropolitan area, going out to close to Joliet in the western suburbs, it never flew. Now, here, the realtors are still brisk in number. The mortgage professionals, however, are not. Thank you, because there I am. What we're seeing is we're seeing individuals forming LLCs, two or three couples forming an LLC, taking money out of their 401ks and buying properties for hold. So they're winterize them, securitize them, and just leave them set. So you'll see a lot of properties where they're just securitized. They call it VPS. And they're just sitting there hanging out, and they have people come by, cut the grass, pick up the trash, make sure nobody's broken in the building. And it's been sitting that way for 2 years. So with people taking money out of their 401ks to buy properties, I'm sure you guys will agree, that means there's going to have to be an upturn of some sort so they can put that money back, sell off and put that money back. Because, you know, you're just borrowing from your 401k. You have to put it back.
And let me just clarify, because there's a difference when you say the land contract certainly is different than a lease option. What I've been mainly doing, Ruth, not a lease option, but a lease purchase, is a little different, where we actually have a set purchase date, a set purchase price right there in the contract where the person is, we follow them for the length of the contract, whether it's a year or 2 years. Where we help them with their credit, we help them do whatever they need to do so that by the contract purchase date in the contract, that's when they actually are going to purchase. So it's not an option really at all. It is, I am stating that I'm going to purchase this house by this date. And it's
well,
not
with
a
the land contract.
Whatever. Yeah, we don't do a whole lot. Well, I don't. I should say I don't do a whole lot of land contracts.
Well, the difference being, you know, for the audience, the difference being a land contract gives you a vested interest in ownership from the day you sign the contract. So, therefore, when this purchase, it has a set purchase price. But when this person goes to the mortgage company to get a loan, because they have a vested interest, it's not a purchase. It's not subject to any purchase rules. It's a refinance. And so I'm sure you ladies will agree, you can refi what you can't buy.
Right.
So that's the huge difference. And these people are still responsible for whatever it takes to make that refinance go through. Similar to your clients are responsible for getting their credit in order, making sure that they keep track of their pay stubs, down payment, whatever. But the refi rules are totally different from the purchase rule. So that's the difference. However, not too many of the investors are even considering it, which leads me to believe that there is going to be some serious profit taking in the next couple of years. There has to be. Too many people came in the market. They're going to let them get their money out.
Now
the bad thing is that the foreclosure engine is not going to stop during that time. Because the devalued properties, and I'm sure you ladies can agree, the current foreclosures are the people who are walking away. My house ain't worth $300,000. Why am I paying a $300,000 mortgage? So the foreclosure, even though they have HAMP loans, there's no lender really helping these people with their underwater mortgages, really. And so the foreclosure engine's not going to stop, so therefore the investors are still going to have a vehicle to pick this stuff up for next to nothing, hold it, and then let it rip later.
And then those people that are walking away still have to have somewhere to go.
Right.
Into realtors. I can help you find an apartment.
Right.
I can help you rent a house. The bad thing is your clients have the rentors have taken such advantage of this that the rents have escalated to the point where people are living. They have to go closer to marginal areas, which isn't exactly gentrification. It's just this is where I can afford. So that's not really helping stabilize neighborhoods or anything else here.
Well, that's because we're in an unstable economy in general. The housing market has such a major effect on the overall economy. It just affects so many different aspects in general. I mean, I have honestly had to tell clients to walk away from a house because if they're – and I feel like that's coming from a consultant standpoint. You know, I'm not – it's not just always about the buck. I mean, sometimes it does make more sense to walk away, but, you know, which – you know, Joy, I think, mentioned earlier, working with investors, it's important to kind of get, for me to get buyers, sellers, owner-occupants, period, in the mindset to be an investor. But it's kind of hard in certain cases when the economy is so crippled. People don't have the money or the jobs to do that, those types of things. But when you start to talk and give people options as far as, you know, well, what money do you have on the table? 401ks and, you know, IRAs, all, you know, that kind of stuff. People get a little scared and fearful of that.
Right.
So
they don't want to take it out themselves. That's why I'm looking at series LLCs popping up, because if Jane and Bob take out $25,000 and Will and Grace take out $25,000, you know what I'm saying, instead of Jane and Bob taking out $50,000.
Right.
So they're spreading the risk.
It is. And to a homeowner, you know, that is where fear creeps in, because they're not in investor mindset. You know, you can try and you can teach people. I'm sorry, I didn't know what. Did someone say something?
No.
Yeah. So it's just hard to get in a homeowner to think as an investor. It's different when you're talking to an investor, but when you're trying to give people options, and when you kind of come down out to just the agent perspective, and like I said, and you start consulting with people, you know, not as a financial advisor, but just as someone who is in the business and knows the options and some of the additional options that you have, people get scared. You know, it's just
I'm
worried about where am I going to live. You know. Where can I rent? And it's just like, well, let's kind of see what the whole picture is here. But people don't want to, you know, they say they want it, but people really don't want to hear that. And it's a sad thing, because the very first show that we had with Aurelia was talking about people's mindset. And Joy, as you talked about setting up LLCs, we've talked about that. And, you know, how you can really make this thing can be a business, this thing can really work for people, but people are just, conditioned to do what
they always do.
That's right.
They've always done.
Right. But the thing is, you've got to have that. You have to have that mindset, because the lenders are not helping.
They
really aren't helping.
They're not in position to help. It's not there. It's not an advantage for them to help you.
Exactly. That's the word. It's not an advantage. It's more than advantage for them because they're making money three different ways every time
that
they foreclose on somebody.
That's it, Joy. I mean,
They're getting it three different ways. And with the current GOP blocking everything, the tax cuts and double indemnity is going to go into effect if they don't move on that legislation. And for your audience, double indemnity is when they foreclose and take your house and they send you a tax liability, 1099, for the difference. Everybody is talking about, you know, we got to figure out what we're going to do about the president. You need to be standing on the neck of the people in Congress right now. Those 535 people are going to make you responsible for something, because the lenders, they're not running the HAMP loans through. Mm-hmm. They're not giving people the modifications. You know, they're not what they're doing is they're keeping the engine going for the investors, and those who have the investor mindset, they'll be the ones who come along and make the money.
And
in
the
Illinois,
and the banks.
The banks are just happy as they want to be because they foreclose on somebody, ka-ching, ka-ching, and they send you a tax liability, ka-ching on that, you know, because they're writing it off and transferring the liability to you. So, I mean, here in LLC, we have the most expensive LLC in the country. It is $1,000. So you got one couple thinking, oh, my God, I got to pay $1,000 for the LLC, and then I need to put each property underneath that in its own, you know, a series. So that's another $400. And I took this out of my 401k. But the ones who have the mindset, they're talking to Will and Grace, and they're talking to Ted and Alice, and they're saying, okay, we spread the risk over three couples, we're good. Let's call a realtor and start buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the everyday person, I mean, they're looking at, say they wanted to grab that condo from the previous example, 2,000 square feet, $28,000. Now they're scared because they're like, well, I could buy it. I'll tell my realtor to offer them $24,000 cash or $25,000 cash, and I could buy it. But then, what's gonna go on the inside, and who's on the inside,
mm-hmm.
and how much
mm-hmm.
does that cost? Where an investor would just say, okay, I'm gonna take that look, go down to the county, find out from the realtor who's in there, so I can get
mm-hmm.
the paperwork filed the day I slide the check
mm-hmm.
across the table and get the keys. That's an investor mindset. As you said,
yes.
a non-investor is going to say, well, let me check and see how much it's going to cost. And what if they in there and they drug dealers or murderers or something? You know, they're not even going to be thinking. They're just people that are in your way. Like an investor would say, they're just in my way. I need to find out what they did so I can get it straight. Oh, and
right.
people aren't going to think that. They're going to think, oh, my God, who's in there? How much
so
is it going to cost?
The sad thing is that the ordinary people are the investors, but you have the ordinary people complain about different things that are not
yes.
working for them in their everyday
yes.
lives, but they
yes.
just simply do not, they don't welcome or they're not open to change or to other options. It's just, you know, the traditional way. Is the right way and the only way, because that's, I guess, what they believe, that's what they were taught, or that is simply what is easy. But easy doesn't always work.
You think that it has to be easy? You believe that ordinary people are not banding together more with a mindset to invest because it's not easy?
I don't know what it is. I don't understand why it isn't. You know, the way I believe we talked about how government banks and different people are just regulating this market, and when really everyday people can really step up if they choose to, but they just don't. It's just, it's a mindset. You know, people think it's too much work, and it really, I feel like an investor can just be an investor. You don't always have to be hands-on to do everything, but
mm-hmm.
it's just a matter of building a team of professionals to work. It's, like you said, get it just. LLCs, and there's so many different ways, but, you know, how many people really care about the different ways?
Well, I think maybe we need to instead do a better job of informing them of the different ways, and then if they've got the facts and they still don't choose, I don't know about you girls, but I'm like, next.
Right.
I mean, there's so many seminars, so many, you know, workshops, so many informative events. People don't take advantage of them, you know, what can we do? And I think people are, it is a risk, and I think they think that it's so much of a risk that they're just so afraid to get involved with it, because if you don't have the people in place to help you
mm-hmm.
along the way, it can be really detrimental. And I've seen some people lose everything they have because they didn't have the right people around them
right.
when they got into the investment portion of it. So if you don't have the right people around you, it is a big risk, and you can lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are seeing that so much of the loss end of it versus saying, okay, you want to get in this business, then somewhere along the line you need to get into some kind of a program or attend a workshop where you can get the people that can surround you, that can help you, and that are, and they are looking, you know, in your best interest so that everybody involved is making
right.
money and not just, you know. So and I think it's a trust issue that a lot of people still have not gotten into. You got to get the right people around you.
Okay,
and that's
lady.
Always the case.
Mm-hmm. Hello, lady. We are really running short on time. Our time is winding down.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if you wanted to continue this dialogue next month.
I'm fine. I'd like to.
Sure.
Okay, because we're going to, you know, I believe that you guys are beginning to touch on something really important, and I don't want the time to cut off, and we're in the middle of it. So you are at the point where you're discussing forming groups and finding ways to inform people of how to do this. So perhaps our listeners can kind of like position themselves to sit down and take notes with the next show we do next month. So if you guys are up for it, what do you think, Sharon?
Oh, I think it's an excellent idea.
Okay. So with that in mind, I would like for each of you to tell us how people can reach you if they want to contact you in your area. We'll start off with Connie. Connie, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
Okay, they can get in contact with me, first of all, by my cell phone number, which is the easiest and quickest way to get a hold of me. My number is 216-538-8684. I also have email connie.browning@fcc.net. You can reach me there. You can reach me on my website. It's connie.browning.listingbook.com, or my office number, 216-692-1686.
Okay, great. Joy, if people wanted to get in contact with you, how can they?
Well, they could. It's pretty easy. They would call my number, which is 773-809-3508. And thanks to technology, it automatically sends me their message as a text message, an email, and a voice message.
Okay.
So that absolutely is the best way. If they would like to send an email with questions, they would send it to joyatbytte, that's joy@byte, as in real estate byte, @gmail.com.
Okay.
But absolutely the easiest thing for anybody to do is to call the 773-809-3508.
Okay, great. Sharon, you can let us, you give it to us every month. Please give it to us.
Sure. You can reach me at area code 302-540-9626. And you can also email me at sharon@hreassociates.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at HLTHY Real Estate. This abbreviation pretty much for Healthy Real Estate. So Twitter, telephone, or email are the best ways to reach me.
Okay, that's great. Someone just chimed in. I don't know who they are. We only have like 1 or 2 minutes left, but we can check and see who this person is. Hello? Hi. Do you have a question? Okay, perhaps not. Perhaps they're just listening in. Anyway, ladies, I would really, really, really like to thank you. You guys have provided such a great wealth of information to the listeners, and I'm sure that they are probably going to sit there and scratch their heads a couple of times, because I was. This is just so much information. I want to thank each one of you, and I want to let our listeners know that they will be back next month, and we're going to continue the conversation and the dialogue, and we're going to go more into how you can get involved, how you can get your feet wet in the industry, and what the necessary steps are. We have some really dynamic women here who have taken the time, and they're sharing their talent with us. And I would like to thank each and every one of you. And Sharon, so next month, I believe that's the second Saturday of the month, next month.
Okay.
Yeah.
They can also send questions to Coco Express, right?
That is correct. You can go on to the website, the Coco Express Show, and we'll be able to answer questions. We're on Facebook, and we have as well as the website. So it's the Coco Express .com, and we'll be able to forward your questions to each one of the persons on the panel. So, ladies, our time is up, and I want to thank each and every one of you, and we'll be picking this up again next month. Thank you all.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome to Real Estate Straight Talk with industry professional Sharon Homer, breaking it down and giving you the inside track on the real estate front so that you too can achieve the new American dream.